Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Jeffrey Wilson is someone I met through a friend. He works at Cane and Table at the service bar, cranking out drinks, cranking them out, but he doesn't want the glory. He doesn't want to be at the main bar chatting everybody up. He wants to do the work. And he also wants to do the work behind the scenes as part of turning tables, which is kind of why he bartends in the first place these days, so that he can be part of Turning Tables, an organization that helps black and brown bartenders and hospitality professionals develop the tools that they can use to succeed in hospitality. And he's also a DJ. So of course I bonded with him, despite him keeping to himself in a corner. He's a real chatty guy. And we had a wonderful conversation, a lot about music, so much about music, because he loves music. This is a guy who lives surrounded by vinyl always. And what a wonderful person to talk to about music and booze. So listen to the music we're about to bring you and get your charitable hat on, because Jeffrey Wilson is doing good things and we're about to talk about it.
So, you have to introduce yourself though, but I love that I'm sitting here watching you put away records, because it just speaks to the passion behind. Did you DJ last night or something?
Yeah. I was really tired too, because I worked right before that, and I got there and I did like 2 20-minute sets, and I'm like, I'm going to fuck home. And I just, I'm done. I did good. I did really good. I played some up-tempo stuff, mostly 108 to 115. Mm-hmm. So within that sort of context. And then I was just like, you know what? I'm fucking tired. I don't feel like talking to anybody anymore. So I'm not. Peace.
Well, now that we are online and everything, introduce yourself and a little bit about yourself, like where you work, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
The official stuff, you know.
Hi, everybody.
Oh, they won't see the video, but I like seeing that. So that's
my name is Jeffrey Wilson. I am a lifer in this fucking industry, I guess.
Which started one? The music one or the bar one?
Well, both, actually.
Yeah.
It's funny. So I have an affinity with music because of the way that I was brought up and where I was brought up, because I was exposed to a lot of stuff, not only from my parents, but also my peers. I grew up in the burbs. So being black in the burbs, I was exposed to classic rock and then punk rock.
The burbs of what?
New York City, actually. I'm from
New
Jersey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You don't think about burbs with New York City, you know?
So New Jersey is a burb of New York City.
Yeah, that's true.
And when you get down to South Jersey, it's a burb of Philadelphia. So so in that sense, I've had a really interesting upbringing. And the time that I grew up, hip hop didn't exist for a while. And then it started to, especially being that close. So that changed my life. But also labels like Factory Records, Joy Division, New Order, Column, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Art of Noise, on the ZTT label. And then Def Jam came along and I was a fucking mark for that. Beastie Boys, I mean, anything that was associated with Def Jam, even Run DMC, but Beasties and Public Enemy, LL Cool J, obviously. I fucking got into Slayer because of Def Jam, because Slayer's second album and third album were on Def Jam. And I just said, oh, it says Def Jam, so I got to pick it up. And that's exactly what I did. I'm like, wow, this is not the music that I normally listen to. So,
yeah, but you have the classic rock growing up. So,
well, I mean, but I associated that with assholes a lot of time. Jacket wearing assholes that even though I smoke pot, I still wouldn't fucking smoke pot with them kind of people. I mean, I made peace with that. There's a lot of classic rock in my, I mean, the Beatles was the first one, obviously. I went basically from the Beatles. My classic rock went like this. I went from the Beatles to the Who, and that was pretty much it on classic rock. And the next thing you know, I'm just like Dead Kennedys. So.
Well, you know, I had a friend who, when he DJed, he would play punk, country, and hip hop. And the reason was his theme for all of that was that it was all rebel music.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, I think that like a label like Def Jam was started in that sort of that idea. So that's why now, years later, that Slayer on Def Jam makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like it made sense to me because of the fact that this is outsider. It was outsider music.
Yeah.
A lot of majors weren't able to distribute it, but I mean, it was the same thing with Def Jam in general, where like Public Enemy with their second record. With It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. Mm. There was a lot of controversy around it, whether it was going to be distributed by Columbia or not. And Columbia decided not to distribute it. It was just through CBS. So yeah, outsider music, but I mean, on a larger scale.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into the service industry because honestly, I had nothing else to do. So I started in college because there was a bar at a place that I lived, and I was just always like pouring beers for everybody and shit like that. And then I started working at the bar that was down the street from my house, and I was DJing there, and then I got a chance to bartend, and I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. So when I finished school, I was back up in Central Jersey in near New Brunswick, and kind of bartending but managing a liquor store, but also trying to get into music with a friend of mine from college, and we got pretty far.
Were you making music now, or was it just DJing out?
We're definitely making music, but I was not happy with my life in New Jersey, and I didn't want to live there for the rest of my life, and I thought that the group was making sort of rash decisions. And I'll give you the example.
Yeah.
You know, the Pixies sent their demos overseas. Mm-hmm. That's how they got signed. And I felt that the type of music that we were making, which was on the sort of Portishead, Massive Attack sort of level, that American companies were just never going to understand it. And I was just like, look, let's send it to these people. This would be better for us if we did it that way. And nobody listened to me. So when there was an opportunity to move to Chicago, I did. And
that was when Chicago was like deep into the electronic music, right?
Right at the beginning, actually. Mm-hmm. Right at the beginning. So there was a thing called Deadly Dragon Sound System, which I think is the catalyst for a lot of stuff. That was 95. That was a catalyst for a lot of musical things that happened in the city. Deadly Dragon was made up of musicians. They played mostly jungle and reggae and stuff like that. And when the first one I went to, right before I moved there, there was nobody. There was like four people there. Mm-hmm. When I moved to the city, it was half full. And maybe a couple of months later, that thing was like the biggest party in the city. Nice. And I met fucking everybody.
Everybody, it was like the other DJs. Is that where you started DJing for the first time? Was it Chicago?
I've been DJing on and off since I was in high school. I've had
me
tables.
Too. Yep.
I've had tables and stuff like that. And I've been in crews and shit like that. I met this guy. His name is Ray Rodriguez. He actually runs his own. He runs his own booking agency right now. He was, I don't know if you ever heard of a label out of Chicago called Hefty Records.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's John Hughes' son, John Hughes.
Ah, that makes so much sense. That was such a musical family, apparently.
So happy. I met Ray was my drug dealer, and by drug dealer I meant he was dealing me. No. He wasn't dealing me drugs. He was dealing me these black crack.
He's dealing you 45s.
No, he was dealing me 12s because at the time Moax was still around, and I was still.
Oh, I loved like crazy. Moax.
Mm-hmm. Like my fucking Moax collection is fucking crazy. I lost the prized possession that I lost from Moax was the Uncle Preview. So it came in a record mailer.
Mm-hmm.
But if you open it, came in a gatefold sleeve with a 12-inch and a 5-inch record.
Ooh, cool.
Open it up. There was a Futura Point Man character diorama. It was so fucking cool, but I lost
that. Amazing.
I lost that though.
So that's incredible. So it sounds like when you got to Chicago, things really blew up for you in terms of the music stuff.
I was working in bars, and I was.
When was your first bar? Was that back in New Jersey? Your first?
Yeah,
bar
it was. Shit, I don't even remember the name of it now.
Yeah, but Chicago. When you got there, you had both. You had like great bars.
Yeah, I had. Well, I worked at Sweet Alice in Chicago, which was it turned into a bar called 1056, and we were all part of the martini craze back then. I remember a couple of things. I had dreads, and I remember this woman was like, you have dreads, but you don't have a Jamaican accent. Where are you from? I'm like, seriously? And then the other one was, the other one was, I made back then we were still shaking martinis like crazy. Mm-hmm. So, the limited touch unique. So we were shaking shit like crazy. And I remember making a blue cheese olive martini with Bombay Sapphire. I pour it out for this lady and she's like, it's wrong. I'm like, what's wrong? She's like, it's not blue.
What?
Yeah. It's not blue.
You're like, so there's education to be done here.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Oh, I can fit this. Definitely on the education. So years and years, I worked in places like Delilah's and Sheffield's was the big one. I worked at the Map Room. I worked at a proto cocktail bar, which is still there, called Ouija's Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into the Violet Hour, and I failed miserably at the Violet Hour because I was folding up. I had a record label and I was folding it at the time, and I was working for another record label at the time. And my confidence was just in the absolute shitter.
Aww.
So I didn't do well there. And then I moved because I met a woman and we were together and things like that. So
is that what brought you to New Orleans?
No, I went to Pittsburgh first.
Oh, okay.
Opened up a bar there called, who's that asshole who wrote that book, that lawyer dude? David Embry. So the bar was called Embry, and it was opened by this dude named Fred Sarkis, and Freddie lives in Nashville now. Freddie was an anomaly. He was a young kid, Middle Eastern, but he dressed like he was from the 30s, and he had so much goddamn knowledge. And I came over and I talked to him because I was like, dude, I remember you because I met him through like a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, dude. He was like, hey, I need help over here at this place. And I'm like, well, I don't know, man. I don't know if I could do this or not. And he goes, look, it's just this, this, and this. And I went, oh, okay. And then that started working. Yeah. He made it really fucking simple.
That's so awesome.
I look back at the notes that I have from the Violet Hour, and I look back at the notes that I have from working at places like Embry, and how much shit has changed over the years. We at Embry, we kept music going where it was like early jazz and shit like that. So what I did was I brought in a lot of like New Orleans jazz and New Orleans funk and tried to loosen it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then we ended up moving to New Orleans, but we couldn't, my wife at the time, my ex-wife, the system here in terms of healthcare, which is absolute shite.
And that's just, in New Orleans, you're saying, or just the United States in general, because
it was horrible. this is 09. Mm-hmm. So it was fucking horrible. So, I mean, we stuck it out until 13, but it was, it was just bad. But at the Violet Hour, Toby Maloney made us watch videos of Chris McMillan.
to learn how to do stuff. Okay.
Yeah. And Chris, I think, did these series of videos. And he was talking about all these cocktails and obviously has a speech about when he does the mint julep and the whole shit. And that was really cool. So when I get down here, the first time, the Museum of the American Cocktail is where I found Chris McMillan. Mm-hmm. And so I said, hey, you know, I'm Jeffrey, I'm from Chicago, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I just started doing this shit not too long ago. I'm really into it. And he's like, well, why don't you come and work in the museum, which is basically just volunteering the time. And that's how I started to meet people. So Nick Dietrich, Kimberly Patton Bragg, Nick Jared, everybody who was here in the city before, Lucy, Chris Hanna, Ian, Julian just graduated from culinaries from the bartending school. Same thing with Travis Sanders. So there's two black people. I'm like, oh my God, other black bartenders. So,
which is crazy to me that at that time you felt that way because New Orleans is a black city.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is why I'm back down here doing what I'm doing right now.
Exactly. Exactly. We'll get into that in a sec.
And then I got to meet the world basically because everybody came down. I met Dale DeGroff and I've got a great Dale DeGroff story. he came down and he was doing a seminar and myself and Kimberly Patton Bragg were batching his cocktail and we both did the specs and we put our straws in. It's like, it's too sweet. Yeah, it is too sweet. What do we do? I don't know. Because we look at the specs again and we're like, well, do you want to tell them that it's sweet? No. I don't want to tell them it's sweet. No, you tell them it's sweet. So we go out there like, Mr. DeGroff. And he's like, yeah, put some bitters in it. Shut the fuck up. So
that's what he said. That's awesome.
just put some bitters. Put Ango in it. And that was it. Because at the time, we all followed everything to the fucking letter.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was like, if they say it's this way, then it must be true because they're successful.
Yeah, totally. But isn't it interesting? I've met Dale a few times and he's so low key about that stuff, you know, and it's that, I'm not sure what the word I want. It's just that like the drink in your hand is your favorite drink right now. You know, if what you want is this, then that's what we'll give you. You know, that whole mentality. We can make you great drinks, but yes.
This is still 4 or 5 years in, you know, 09, 10. I mean,
yeah.
You know, those cocktails that are being made are starting to get out there.
Yeah.
But these are the people that we read their books.
Yeah.
They're leaders in the industry. Gaz Regan comes down. We're all fucking blowing him. Same thing with Wondridge. You know, we're all just like, oh, this is awesome. And they're just like, calm down. You know, like, chill, guys. It's not
it's
that
just
big
booze. Yeah, totally. It's making good drinks. So when did you officially get to New Orleans? Was it then when you were at
'09. I started at Tonique.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and nice. I was actually living right behind Tonique at the time too.
Oh, that's handy. I've come across that so much when I go to New Orleans. People are like, oh, I just live on this block. I just work right here. I live behind it. You know?
I literally lived right behind Tonique.
And Tonique is great. I mean, it's just always been great. You know,
it's always been great.
So okay, tell me about turning tables though, because you were saying, you know, we just made that comment on. I cannot believe that there weren't. I
mean, there's a lot of me being the first black guy in a bunch of fucking places that, you know, it before it used to give me anxiety. Now I'm actually like, I'm kind of proud of it now. So almost there.
Yeah.
Almost there. I'm going to turn around and put these away.
And no, I'm going to, while you're putting some stuff away, I'm going to, what you're saying makes me think of something that I go through here in Los Angeles and that, gosh, as far as we know, I'm a partner in a bar that's female owned and operated. Okay. And we've lost 2 out of the 7 that we were aware of in the last couple months. And so that means that in all of LA County, which is massive at this time, as far as we know, there are only 5 female owned and operated bars here, which is insane because LA County is giant, right?
Yeah.
But I always joke around. I am sure that there's, you know, some abuelita, you know, in some place in Whittier that's been running her own bar on a corner for like 40 years. And she just doesn't care about us and we don't know about her, you know?
I mean, that's part of the changing landscape of it too, because you know, when I lived in Chicago, there were still all these old man bars that were, you know, selling like chartreuse, so like $3 a shot.
I remember getting like a $3 shot of chartreuse in the bourbon They're like in the French Quarter several years ago at one of these little sidebars. And I was just I'm so glad.
Just didn't have a goddamn clue of what they had. Yeah. So, no, there's probably plenty of those. And I miss old man bars, because we talk about a sense of community. We talk about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked in a liquor store when I was underage.
Yeah.
And there was plenty of people who came through who were always like part of the community.
Yeah.
And yeah, they had some shitty drinking habits, but they were part
of the But you knew them. They were your neighbors.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hence the old man bars.
That is sort of missing. And I'm hoping that, like, at least with Tanique mm-hmm. does have regulars. I can say that. There's just not a lot of people who go to cocktail bars now who are regulars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what is Turning Table accomplishing right now? What's the mission statement of Turning Table?
So basically we are, and I can say we because I'm definitely part of it. We are an advocate for diversity, equity, inclusion within the service industry.
Mm-hmm. And when did it start up?
2019. So I was living in White Wakanda, which mm-hmm. You folks call Portland, Oregon. I heard about the program from this kid, Steve Yamada, who now lives in Detroit. And Yamada was like, yo, dude, this guy, Teray, he started this program. It's really dope. We're teaching people how to get into the service industry. And Yamada was another ally, friend, mm-hmm. who, you know, first, you know, Asian kid down here, just trying to do things. We did a pop-up together. We did a couple of pop-ups together that were really successful, but like places that we wanted to work still weren't giving us the time of day. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely shit. I always forget one record. That was definitely so an eye-opening thing to hear, like Steve, because Steve was furthering his education as well. Mm-hmm. So he was like, hey dude, this is really, really cool. So 2018 at Portland Cocktail Week, they had this thing called Brown and Balanced. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. Brown and Balanced is a showcase for Black and Brown bartenders.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, how come I'm not in it? So I go and I meet Josh, and I'm like, yo, dude, I don't know if you know who I am, and it doesn't really matter, but you're talking about motherfuckers who've been in the industry for a long time that should be in this fucking thing. That should be me. Motherfucker, you and I are going to go at it if I'm not in it next year.
So he was like, all right, you're in.
All right, you're in. So Steve goes, I was like, hey, Steve, I got in the Brown and Balanced. He was like, oh, great. Teray's in it too. So you need to meet him and talk about Turning Tables. I'm like, okay. So I did a little research and, you know, read about it, and he mm-hmm. ran that whole fucking thing by himself.
Wow.
So,
wow.
So we're sitting there and we just hit it off because I'm a dork and I can't tie balloons for some reason, which was never really one of those things in my life where I was like, oh, I need to learn how to tie balloons. So
I can't tie balloons.
We're doing some self-decorating stuff like that. And,
I get too nervous to tie balloons.
Yeah, we immediately hit it off.
Nice.
So he goes, well, what are you doing right now? And I quit bartending. I mean, I literally, I was making ice for PDX Ice.
Oh, wow.
When I had to do the cocktail, I just made up that cocktail while I was cutting 2-inch cubes on a meat grinder. So I was like, oh, I could just do this with the singleton and blah, 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 blah. And I asked another person who was a bartender, I'm like, what do you think? He's like, yeah, that sounds good. I'm like, cool. And I just sent him in the spec. So I never even tasted the shit until I made it. So we were cutting up on each other and all this other stuff. And then we saw each other during the week because for me, Black people only come to Portland when there's a basketball game or it's Portland Cocktail Week. That's pretty much it. So he was like, well, what are you doing? And I'm like, nothing. I fucking hate it here. And he was like, come back to New Orleans. Okay.
Nice. Nice.
And at that time, I was also talking with Jeff and Anine, and they're like, yeah, you know, do you want to come back? Because we've got a spot for you. And I'm like, working with you guys? Fuck yeah. Let's do it.
Oh, so when you came back, you went to Latitude first.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeff and Anine are great.
Oh, they're awesome. Great. They're awesome. I have a great Jeff story. I like telling this. So they came to visit, I think, 2011. Mm-hmm. We're doing something over at the museum, so you know, we're all like, oh, it's Jeff Barry, you know, let's get his autograph, let's take a picture and all this other stuff. So I was like, hey, dude, can I take a picture? And he was like, yeah. So I was like, you know, hey, here at the museum today is Jeff Barry. And then I put under his photograph, Mahalo, bitches. And the next thing I know, I'm getting friended by Aneen. So yeah. It was awesome.
Wind up. I met you at Cain and Table. So when did you wind up over at Cain and Table? Was that after
my anxiety when I got down here, because I never talked to anybody about my divorce. I got divorced. So yeah. I was with this woman for 11 years. I took care of her, all this other stuff. And I didn't, when we broke up right before COVID. So when COVID happened, I was living with a roommate who was a bartender friend of mine, and we used to work together at Multnomah Whiskey Library, and he's a great guy. I get along with him great. He's awesome, actually. And I think this is at the point where both him and I actually started to take care of ourselves. Mm. Started doing yoga. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we're smoking lots of weed and drinking on the weekends and shit
yeah,
like
but
that.
But that's medicinal now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is medicinal now. But when I got down here, I didn't have any therapy at all. So when I got down here, because I haven't bartended in a couple of years, I was just I don't know if I still have it or not. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody goes, hey, here's a 14 touch cocktail, I went, I can't remember that. You know, the rum barrel. So I was just like, yeah, I know it now, but I couldn't remember it at the time. So Aneen came over and she was just like, hey, dude, it's not working. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. It isn't. And she was just like, I can help you in any way. I'm like, no, it's okay. And the next day I went out and I got a job. And I got a job actually working with Nick Jarrett. So, and then with that, Cain and Table opened up. And I worked at Perestroika. So I was just like, yeah, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, I was also in therapy at the time. Mm-hmm. Confidence was back. Yeah. I knew what I was doing, but I get imposter syndrome. I'm not going to front.
Oh, totally. And you know, when you get beat down, I mean, and I really appreciate you, especially as a man, being able to talk about this, because that's something that people don't talk about. And I've many men in this same age bracket in my world where I'm just like, therapy's okay. You know, it can help you get back on track. You
yeah. Know, my father never told us that he was in therapy, because it sure as hell would have helped us, you know, like knowing that about him. Because yeah. You know, and then finally, you know, because when they get old, they start talking and shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, yeah, but you could have told us that like years ago. What the fuck? Why are you? I'm 50 now. Why the fuck are you telling me this now? Shit that I could have known it like
better
30.
Late than ever, right? Come on. So you've been at Cain and Table now for a couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah. Since Ida.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. And through COVID.
No, not through
COVID.
Right at the post-COVID point. So
okay.
When I started working there with Ed, there was still no bar back. So we did a fucking Mardi Gras season without a fucking bar back.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was fucking brutal.
But now, what's your position over at Cain and Table now?
Bartender.
Are you just bartender over there? I wasn't sure if you were a manager or, you know, where you got.
No, I'm never managing.
Yep. Right. That's smart, because then it allows you to do this other stuff, right? You have this freedom. But I have to ask you, I ask everybody this. Have you been able to get any kind of music themed drinks on the menu while you've been there? I know they have a very, very tropical.
I have never, there's only, see, okay. So this book right here.
Uh-huh.
My turntable.
Your little black book?
Yeah.
Was sitting on top of your turntable, like, above your box of 45s.
The black book that I had when I lived here the first time. And I realized that I made sure I had this to show you that I actually had a lot of musical ideas in terms of a lot of cocktails that I made. Like, I had a jasmine liqueur drink that had jasmine, white rum, Falernum blue curacao, pineapple balsamic shrub.
Yum.
I called it the Jazz Baroness in Blue.
Nice. Oh my God, that sounds delicious.
I know I had a cocktail that was named after a Boards of Canada song.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what it was.
Well, they've got kind of long names.
Oh,
anyway.
I know I named one after John Herndon from Tortoise. Orinoco, simple lemon, and then grapes. Called it the grape dope.
I love that you have a whole book of this. This is amazing. Yeah.
So I mean, there's a time that I did, but there really isn't now.
Yeah. But you've had that opportunity to do it.
I always have music when I'm thinking about shit. But like, I have a cocktail on the menu right now, which is just called the Green Banana. It's just because I wanted something that tastes like a green banana. Music is always going to be there. There isn't any point in my life, especially in bars, where I can't have music because I will slaughter every last human fucking being.
It does indeed suit the savage beast. Yes,
I am being honest with you. So if there's no music in a bar and you see me there, I would run.
Well, you just DJ'd last night, and so you still get out and DJ. You've got turntables going on. Are you mentoring people within turntables at this time, or is it kind of cycling them through, finding them opportunities?
Yes, I can finally admit through therapy that I am a mentor. I've always known that with all the places that I've been, either Pittsburgh or Portland or Phoenix, places to start with P.
Yeah.
That I have been a mentor to people, but I don't, I always downplay it. I've taught people how to do this. I've taught people how to do this and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And they're still friends. We're all still friends and it's all still great. And these are friends that I have for a long fucking time, especially now that we're getting older.
That's amazing. And you've got to be proud. Can you allow yourself to be proud about this, that you've got these, train these people and place them in, not quite there yet?
I can tell
you, I'm terrible at taking a compliment in any capacity. So I totally get you. The imposter thing is real. It is.
Yeah, I'm horrible. I know that you said, like, you said to me, like, you look nice. And I was like, yeah, that's great.
Yeah. I am so 100% there with you.
I'm like, wow, somebody nice complimented me in a nice way. That's all I can come up with.
Yeah, mine is usually, if I get something like that, it's usually like, oh, what earrings do I have on today? Oh yeah, those are cute, huh? That's like, you know, deflect. So what are your DJ gigs like, since you still get out there and DJ? What kind of events do you DJ?
So I work at the Virgin Hotel for that.
I do Sunday
brunches over there. So I'll
awesome.
And I do mostly love songs, and they're mostly soul. I mean, once in a while I'll sneak in like a Flock of Seagulls, because Photograph of You or something like that, because I fucking love that song. Mm-hmm. Once in a while when I'm in a bad mood, I'll play Love Will Tear Us Apart, because I'm like, well, it's a love song. So, you know, but mostly it's soul and funk that are going to be on that menu for that. And then last night the crew is called Wax Figures, and I just bought a lot of up-tempo like boogie and stuff like that.
Nice. Okay, that's so
the Mantronics record that I'm holding.
Oh my God, it's a Mantronics 45.
Yeah,
I feel like I've only ever seen them in 12 inch.
Yeah, got to have your love.
My God, I love it. So okay, this is a DJ question then. You've got to have a couple go-tos that when you're out there DJing, there's like a couple songs that you put on that make you happy, but also make the crowd react. There's always a couple, right?
Yeah.
So I need to hear a couple of them. Like one of mine is actually Spencer Davis Group, I'm a Man. That's one that always goes.
There's
Atomic
one.
Dog 45. So that's one, anytime you put it on, the entire room just jumps.
Yeah. Since I'm in my Capitol Records thing, I'll show you the second one as soon as I find it. This one.
And you're holding up. I can't see it. You're going to have to read
it. I know. It's dark. It's Before dark. I Let Go by Maze.
It's what?
Before I Let Go by Maze.
That's another one?
Becky Beverly, yeah.
You know, if you put that on, everybody's going to jump. I love it. That's so much fun. It's so fun to have those because, like, you know instantly, like, okay, we've been going. People are good. And if I drop this record, the whole energy here is just going to go just bonkers. And everybody's so excited. I love that. That's so fun. I'm so happy you still get to do that. You know, I don't very often these days.
And the thing is that I don't even tell people that I do it most of the time. I'm just like, I'm DJing tonight. Like, I got this about a month ago.
It is Fearless. Pink Floyd.
Yeah, I didn't know they actually put this out as a 7.
Is a 7-inch? Jeez. Yeah. That's amazing. I never knew that was a 7-inch either. That's so cool. How many 45s do you think you have there?
1,500.
And then how many 12, like how much vinyl, like 12 inches do you have? Do you know? Takes up your whole room.
It takes up, yeah. It takes up my whole, it takes up, actually, they're on the floor. But here,
real quick. You are so lucky you don't live in earthquake country, because that's something I have to think about all the time.
This is all the boxes.
Jeez, this looks like a storage unit of vinyl. This is amazing.
those are all the boxes of records, and they're where I can find them and nobody else can.
That's amazing. So would you say at this point then that is the bartending, is that a passion right now, or is it just
no,
the music is the passion still?
No, the mental. Turning tables and music are the passion. And
amazing enough,
both of those things seem to fall within, because like Trey and I have like the same sort of, we've grew up like around the same type of music.
Yeah.
And hip hop, we'll just go crazy and talk about all the fucking time. And then like, I was sitting over his house and he has the first grizzly bear. And I was like, fuck, because I lost that in the flood. I'm like, dude, let me borrow that. So
that's amazing. I love it. So then, okay. So if someone wants to track you down and learn more about Turning Tables, what's the best way to do that?
Well, turningtablesnola.org is the website.
Okay.
My Instagram is pretty useless because all I do is put up records. So
I know. I love it though. That makes me happy.
If you want to see about records, yeah, go to my Instagram. I mean, I do, I do post about my peers. Especially if they're people of color, because I like that to promote, because I just want people who know me to see that these are the people that I appreciate within this industry that are out here trying to get this done, have climbed these mountains. They're people more successful than I am. And I'm always going to give them their flowers.
Yeah.
And I'll always try to support in whatever, because I never thought I would be successful within this industry. Mm-hmm. I thought that it was just a means to an end for a while. It was an endless sense of anxiety. But I think I'm at a point in my life where, I have to think about this. I think I'm at a point in my life where there are people, I've got knowledge enough to hand to people and say that you can be successful doing this. Mm-hmm. And I think I've been doing that for a while. I'd rather be the Mac in the back than the person out front.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's amazing. Amazing. And people need them. They need that.
Yeah.
You know, they need someone who can support them and who can show them off and give them visibility. Harry, I'm trying to speak. That's something I noticed too. Just we've seen a lot of the same people over and over and over again. And it's nice to see new faces that are just as important and doing just as good at work.
The industry has definitely changed in our favor.
For sure.
I always tell the cohorts, because I can't say kids, I always tell the cohorts that like before camp, I mean, well, they were like, well, what was Tales of the Cocktail like before camp? I'm like, it was star fucking. That's all it was. Famous people come out, talk about their shit. Hey, I just made a new booze. Here, drink it, go to a party. And that's basically it. There wasn't a lot of education after camp. And Portland Cocktail Week and camp were the things that changed the industry.
And by camp, you mean Camp Run Amok.
Camp Run Amok. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got invited the first 2 years, but I couldn't go because I was taking care of somebody. That would have been cool. And I probably would have met more people that way. But Brown and Bounce, Chocolate City's Best, Turning Tables. Those are the things that started because of, like, Brown and Bounce definitely started because of camp. City's Best are from the people who are just like, yeah, we need to get these people together because these people are coming here and we have all these people here in Washington, D.C., you know, that Turning Tables because Trey knew people at camp. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it is. And then all these people went to camp. So I didn't get a chance to go. But then again, when I think about it, I'm like, did I really want to be in a cabin with like 7 other? No.
You're good doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
That's excellent. Well, cool. I think we could wrap this up if you want to. I love just all this information. I love the, I know how hard it is to sell yourself up, but you're presenting really great stuff to people and giving people opportunities. And that's so important. And I just really appreciate that you're out there doing that. So
thanks,
thank you for doing that. So, okay. I always ask people, and this is going to be a hard one for you, I think, just because you love music so much, but it's that when you're home chilling out, what is the drink and what is the record? What are you listening to?
Well, if I'm home and I'm by myself, I always like to crack open a bottle of Turning Tables rum.
There's Turning Tables rum?
Yep.
I had no idea. Oh my God. When did that start getting put out?
We're still waiting for it. I'm still waiting for the distributor to get back to me.
Amazing. So this is something that people should be keeping an eye out for.
Yes.
Amazing.
It's just going to be for Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
We only made a certain amount of cases. We did it with Portian.
This is
from 2021.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2021 new make and it's at 100 proof.
Oh my God.
The idea was that Portian makes great rum, but they had it at 86. And mm-hmm. me being a bartender, I was just like, hey, we need a 100 proof rum. And they're like, okay, let's do it. And I said, hey, what about it for Turning Table? And they said, okay. And so that's how it got done.
There you go. So slowly but surely it'll get out there to the world, hopefully.
Yeah.
What are you listening to while you're sipping on your Turning Tables rum? Your 100 proof Turning Tables rum. I was going to say, it's tough. I know, because you love music so much. Some people have their go-tos, but I'm sure for you, it just depends on the day.
If I don't want lyrics, then it'll probably be something like Future Sounds of London or Tortoise or Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Can't listen to Coltrane and Reed, though, because I'm always like super into the music. But maybe something more on the like Massive Attack, that sort of vibe too.
Yeah.
Sade, if it's lyrics, then it's Sade and it's Prince, because if I'm like, let's say I'm folding laundry, you know what? I don't want to look at my computer right now.
Yep.
I just want, sing lyrics to something. I'll put on Sign of the Times.
Nice. It's such a beautiful record. It's a beautiful record all the way through.
All time favorite Prince record.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay if you change your mind later.
No. Sometimes
we're not holding you to it.
I do. When I think about the first side of that record, Sign of the Times, Housequake,
mm-hmm.
Play in the Sunshine, Ballad of Dorothy Parker.
Yeah.
There's so many fucking styles just on that one side.
Prince.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Perfect. I love all of that. Perfect. So on that note, you're saying don't follow on the Instagram. Go to the
It's Rev_RobertSineWave. It says Turning Tables Music Nerd or Turning Tables Vinyl Collector Bartender, something like Music Fucking Nerd Vinyl Collector. And it says
but
bartender.
Really, the best thing to do is just pop by Cane and Table and see you if you're there.
No, because I don't talk to nobody. That's why I'm in the service well. Fuck that. There are people out there that people need to see. I've had my time in the sun. I'm good. Seriously good.
So look, now behind the scenes, Turning Table. There we go.
Yeah, I make good fucking drinks. But I make them on a consistent level. That's absolutely fine. But if like Erica's there, talk to fucking Erica. If Omar's there, talk to fucking Omar. Don't worry about me.
Well, I'm really grateful to have this chance to talk to you one-on-one because you're a fascinating person and completely intelligent, doing good things. So take that as you will. You don't have to thank me right now. You can think on it.
I hate you.
I love you back. But thank you so much.
Back in the days, we used to rock the house a little something like this. Whoa, whoa.
All right, that is someone who I find very inspiring. Thank you, Jeffrey, for chatting with me. And if you want to find him on Instagram and check out what 45s he's got going for you, because he's got, the whole thing is just pictures of labels of vinyl. It's great. But it's at Rev_RobertsonWave. It's like Robertsine, wave. And then go online to turningtablesnola.org and check out what that organization is all about, doing really good things for their community and other communities too. So thank you so much, Jeffrey, for being a guest today. It's always awesome to talk to you. I'm not getting to go to New Orleans as much this year as I have in the last year. And oh, I know what it means to miss New Orleans. So that's probably the last interview with a New Orleans person for a minute. And I'm glad that it was Jeffrey. We spoke on a thunderous day, which seems very appropriate.
Somebody scream, Woody, what's the name? Disco, the game, when you rock me, you that's the place.
Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.